presents Idaho Pulse with Tea Party Bob, your stethoscope on the chest of Idaho politics, and sometimes a boot. This is Idaho Talk Radio, IRDO.
Welcome once again to the Idaho Pulse with your host, Tea Party Bob, bringing you important information about what is happening in our state. Today, we are once again privileged to have Ronald Nate, president of the Idaho Freedom Foundation, with us to discuss the craziness of the grocery tax credit, the possible repeal of Medicaid expansion, and budget commitments made by our conservative gang of eight. So without further delay, as they say, let's get on with the show. And hello, Ron. It's a pleasure to have you here again.
How you doing, Bob? It's a pleasure to be on. It's a great, am I allowed to say the day? It's a great Friday, Bob. But anyway, so we're doing great here at the Idaho Freedom Foundation. You want to find more about what we're doing? Idahofreedom.org is where you go. And doing research on all sorts of things and also keeping you apprised of what your legislators do as opposed to what they say they do.
That's interesting, because most of the time they don't say very much about what they're doing.
Oh, no. I hear them say that they're conservatives. As a conservative, I got to follow the Constitution, and I'm a conservative. And
conservative or concernatives?
I said conservative, but yeah, concernative. That's an interesting one. That has a connotation too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Well, I just had the pleasure, Bob, of sitting through about an hour of debate on the House floor about raising the grocery tax credit, not the grocery tax, but the grocery tax credit. I got to point out something, a little bit of history on this. Did you know that Idaho is one of only four states fully taxes groceries like it does other goods? Four states: Mississippi, South Dakota, Hawaii, and Idaho. Not only that, Idaho has the second highest sales tax on groceries. Only Mississippi has a higher sales tax on groceries. And but you'll talk to a legislator and say, I cannot believe that red state Idaho taxes groceries and only three other states do. And they'll say, but did you know about the grocery tax credit, that we give families back money to compensate for the money they pay in grocery tax?
Do they realize that poor families have to eat all year round, not just at the end of the year when they get the credit?
They ignore that convenient fact. But the other part about this is that the amount that families get back in the form of a credit is about half the amount that's collected in terms of grocery taxes. So it makes me feel not better at all to say, oh, well, I get a grocery tax credit after the government holds on to it for a year and they only pay back a fraction of what Idahoans are paying. And not only that, this new plan is that they recognize that some families don't get all of it back, but if you want more money back, you can collect all your grocery receipts for the year, itemize what qualifies for the food tax credit, add all that up, submit copies of it with your tax return for up to $95 more a person. Now, are you going to spend 30 hours doing all that? I don't think so. I'm not going to do it. I mean, the pay rate on that is way lower than McDonald's.
Well, but the point is, when you have people who are working two jobs, in many cases, these lower income families, mm-hmm. when are they going to have time to actually go through all of these grocery receipts? Most of them are living hand to mouth.
Gosh, you can't even save them that long. I mean, who saves receipts that long? What are you going to do? Put them in a in a bag in the pantry and just save them up and then go. It's just ridiculous. It's insulting. It's bookkeeping for breadcrumbs. And I don't think any Idahoan should look their legislator in the face and let him get away with that sort of thing. So I watch an hour debate. They're making jokes on the floor about, hey, I got emails from a bunch of constituents. One of them was for me. And you're just like, when people take the time to email their legislator that they're frustrated with a tax, the last thing I want to see is my legislator making jokes about one of those emails or a few of those emails. Mine meant something. And so it's frustrating. And it's also frustrating to hear all the red herring arguments out there that it's important that we have this tax because tourists pay it or illegals pay it. So we have good conservatives saying we want tourists to pay Idaho bills. That doesn't sound like a conservative thing. We also have conservatives saying, hey, it's one of the few taxes that illegals pay. Well, I thought as conservatives, we didn't want illegals here. Why do we have a whole tax system structured on the assumption that they're here? It doesn't make sense to me that these weird little arguments about let's tax all Idahoans, keep their money for a year, only give part of it back for the purpose of getting money from tourists.
Ron, now, how many of our representatives that are on that floor actually understand how much we pay for illegals each year out of state funds?
I really don't know. But, you know, trying to get a bill passed in health and welfare that says illegals should not get any public assistance dollars is a hard thing to pass in our red state, Idaho. Isn't that amazing? Let me tell you some more grocery tax statistics. Did you know that in the last 5 years, Idahoans have paid $1.6 billion just in taxes on groceries?
Yep.
And then, the so-called conservative legislator will tell you, yeah, but you get a tax credit back. Well, $823 million came back in tax credits. That means that 49%, almost half of the taxes we pay on groceries does not come back to Idaho families. And I don't think that half the taxes paid are coming from tourists or illegals. I think it's coming from good old Idahoans. Not only that, why pick on tourists? Why should they pay for our stuff? I would rather whatever money they spend in Idaho goes to Idaho businesses, not Idaho government. It's one of the silliest arguments I've heard. You know, when I was in the House, we actually passed grocery tax repeal. The governor vetoed it. Governor Otter vetoed it in 2017. Since then, Idahoans have paid over $2 billion in grocery taxes. You can thank Governor Otter for that. And to the extent Governor Little sits on his hands and Speaker Mike Moyle stops every grocery tax repeal proposal, you can thank them for the last $1.6 billion of grocery taxes that we're paying. It's not a conservative principle to tax people, hold their money, give part of it back, and then try and expect them to be happy for your system.
You know, it begs the question to me. I stood literally side by side with Mike Boyle back in, I think it was 2015, in front of a Senate committee talking about the grocery tax. And this man was actually saying, we need to get rid of this tax. What changed his mind? What could possibly have changed his mind? What has changed with the grocery tax that makes that much of a difference?
He finds that making his allies happy usually happens through government spending and government largesse. And so to the extent there are less tax collections coming into Idaho government means less ability for him to please his cronies. It's as simple as that.
Are we talking about lobbyists?
Talking about lobbyists, talking about business friends, talking about farmer friends, talking about teacher unions, talking about education establishment, you name it. Name the special interest. Look at the governors, look at the legislators' donation sheets, and you'll see it riddled with PACs, lobbyists, special interest, and cronies.
I have to tell you, it really disturbs me, the fact that Speaker of the House, who I've known for many years, I know he's always been a fence sitter. Been there for most of his life in the legislature. But I also, it kind of worries me in the fact that we got an election coming up in 2 years. And it appears that we only have one person that's going to run and one potential that could run, but I wouldn't want him anyway right now.
Well, we need good people to run, but we also need the good people of Idaho to know what their legislators actually do, to know what they have in office, because every legislator comes back home and says they're conservative, said they held the line on spending, held the line on tax increases. But what they don't tell you is the bad votes, like many of them did today.
And so that's where they don't tell you what's on the end of the line.
That's right. House Bill 231 in the House, six legislators voted conservatively to let Idahoans keep their money instead of this silly grocery tax and credit system. 61 voted for the bill just to keep the tax credit in place, give you some breadcrumbs, and call it good.
That's kind of scary.
It is. We need to, it creates job security for me because it's my job to go out and inform Idahoans, to distribute the Freedom Index, let them know how their legislators actually vote. And we'll do that.
I'm sure you wish your job was less secure if you didn't have to do that.
Oh, I'd love to put myself out of work by having a truly conservative legislature and governor. That would be awesome.
What would you estimate we have in terms of conservative legislators in our House of Representatives currently?
Well, we have, I think we have 61 Republicans and 9 Democrats in the House. That's by party name only. I would say that based on votes like today and something like that, we probably have somewhere between 6 and 13 conservative legislators, maybe 13 ops in the House. In the Senate, we might have, between 3 to 10 conservative legislators in the 35 person Senate. And so, and I'm doing this based on votes and voting records and voter and history. Sometimes though, the numbers do belie what's really going on because a lot of good bills never get voted on. And so these numbers are kind of rosy to some extent because legislators don't like to take awkward votes. And leadership protects them from awkward votes. And so do they get to vote straight up on grocery tax repeal? No. Speaker Moyle shuts that down every year. And David Cannon, the chair of Rev and Tax, helps him do that.
Well, I don't know. Where do you go from here if we're going to try to change this? Do you wait for another legislative session or do you try to do it again this year?
Well, I think we need to, I think Idahoans should draw a line in the sand and say, I'm not going to vote for any legislator who does not commit to repealing grocery tax and holding Speaker Moyle accountable. We had 6 brave ones who did it today. We need more. 80, and I'm not just saying this is, this will be good for Idahoans. 87% of Idahoans want to see the grocery tax repealed instead of this silly tax and credit system. 87%.
Wow.
You don't get any public survey polls that give you numbers like that. And this legislature is just deaf to that. Our governor, Speaker of the House are just deaf to that. Also, the Senate pro tem ought to be working on this too, but no, he sponsored the bill as well. Something else too. 3 years ago, I stood on the House floor 30 times to call grocery tax repeal up for a vote. 30 times the House voted me down on this, but I had a good 12 to 15 folks who stood with me in solidarity and said, we want to vote on grocery tax repeal. Did you know that there was about, there were a handful of those today who flip-flopped and now they're voting with establishment on this. They are the new establishment. They're voting against grocery tax repeal and for extending this stupid credit.
I think it's time for me to get on the air on Monday and start talking about this because somebody needs to get this right out there to the people to see what's going on.
Absolutely. You'll get in trouble because they want to pass. They don't want this talked about. Every time I talk about it, I get people calling me saying, why are you attacking conservatives? And my answer is vote better and I'll stop talking about it.
Ron, I've been in trouble all my life.
Yeah, well, me too. Me too. And so, I'm done being worried about what people are saying. But you know what? Last year was the best year Idaho Freedom Foundation had ever, and it's because we are exposing stuff like this. And so if your listeners out there are agreeing with me at all, we do need to continue that support, because as we do this work, the naysayers make up lies, they tell mistruths, they spread rumors, and try and tell you that Idaho Freedom Foundation is just attacking them for no reason. Look at the votes. We attack only for good reason.
Can I ask a question? I saw, I guess it was in one of the emails I got, that there's an Idaho Freedom Foundation, but also a Freedom Foundation. What's the difference?
Idaho Freedom Foundation is us. We're located a block from the Boise Capitol building, and so we engage with legislators a lot. We see what they say. We monitor what they do. There's a group called Freedom Foundation, and that is out of Washington State. Sometimes they do some policy analysis in Idaho. It's kind of confusing because they're just called the Freedom Foundation, but we are the Idaho Freedom Foundation.
Maybe they're doing all that policy work because they're thinking about maybe they'll have part of their state assessed into Idaho at some point in time. What do you think?
We'll take the good parts. How about that? Let's do it.
Well, the guy that drew Idaho drew it the wrong way anyway. We need to have that extra piece.
That's right. You remember that that whole continental divide controversy? We lost some land to Montana over that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You want to talk about something else?
Yeah, let's get on with, we wanted the grocery tax, but I think what's even more important, the big heavy hammer hanging over Idaho's head is Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, Medicaid expansion. Hasn't that been just a peachy thing to have? I think it was in 2020. No, it might have been 2018 was the vote on that.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
Medicaid expansion vote. And so then the legislature got to consider whether to keep that initiative vote or to overturn the citizens. And the legislature, weak as it usually is, voted to keep the Medicaid expansion in. They didn't even have the guts to put in work requirements or anything like that, like a normal, work requirements for able-bodied people. I'm not picking on the weak here. I'm just saying that if you're able to work, and you shouldn't just be on the government dole.
Well, I'm surprised they never put in a trigger mechanism that if the government decided to drop from 90 to 80, it's gone.
Yeah, well, when this was voted on, we were spending about $197 million in Idaho on Medicaid. Now, remember, that's 10% of it. The federal government does 80 to 90% of the cost, and Idaho basically runs the program for them and spends about 10 to 20% of the cost. And we had 73,000 people on Medicaid, and it was about $2,600 a person. That was in 2020. Boom, Medicaid expansion happens. And by the way, the initiative passed on a lie, because people were being told that, it will only cost us $400 million. It'll save us money and other expenses, and it'll fill the gap, and it will just save so much more money elsewhere. It'll be a great thing to do. Too many Idahoans believe that. They pass Medicaid expansion. And instead of $400 million, year one, it was $670 million. You were already over by, 60%? It wasn't even close.
The numbers that they proposed in the original document that they put out, I think it was Milliman put it out, was just falsified to the nth degree. And when you take a look at the fact that they had literally 61% of Idahoans that voted for it, that was a shock to me, because I didn't think that they were that gullible.
I didn't think so either, but the lie was sold. The people bought the lie. They voted for it. And instead of $400 million, $670 million. Enrollment jumped from 73,000 people to 100,000 people, 101,000 people. And the cost per enrollee went from $2,600 per person to $6,600 in 1 year.
Triple.
And you go, wow, that's a massive increase in government. But that was just the start. And that was 2021. Now here we are looking at the 2026 budget. $1.36 billion.
Isn't that amazing?
It's doubled since then. Only 109,000. I mean, we reached a peak of 133,000 in 2023, but now it's back down to 109,000 because we've dumped some ineligibles off the rolls who were not able to be dumped off the rolls during COVID. But so 2021, about 101,000 people. 2026, 109,000. Not that many people more, but about double the cost. So how does that happen? You only have 8,000 more people, but you're doubling the cost to now almost 1.4 billion. It's because the cost per individual is not 2,600 like it was in 2020. It's not 6,600 like it was in the first year of expansion. It is now $12,461 per person.
How do you account for that tremendous expansion in what they're paying?
They would say it's inflation and those kind of costs. I would say, yeah, absolutely. But that inflation didn't come from nowhere. It came from COVID dumping a bunch of money into the hospitals and the medical system. And they can just adopt that money by having higher prices. So it's the money chasing the goods or the services that drove up the prices. And the prices don't come back down. So now we're spending about twice as much per person, serving about 30,000 more people, and we're experiencing double the cost. It's outrageous. It's outrageous. This is one of the worst government programs we ever had. It is the biggest slice of the state government pie. And the good news is there is a bill to restore some accountability. And it is one that says, you know what? We can't have more than 5% ineligibles being paid. Now, isn't that amazing that we're going to tolerate 5% of what? But, you know, 5% would be an improvement, believe it or not, Bob. We're going to have regular reporting. We're going to have, you know, limitations. We're going to create work requirements, a whole series of things. I think it's like 7 different items that have to be met for Medicaid expansion to continue. If you can't make it accountable, you can't have the program. It's as simple as that. And so the bill by Redmond, I think it's House Bill 138, is the one that would achieve that. It could be the most important bill of the legislative session.
Is this the one that Josh Tanner introduced?
No, it was Jordan Redmond, and it made it out of committee by one vote. So it'll be on the House floor next week sometime. You need to call up your legislators and tell them this Medicaid expansion trigger bill needs to pass the floor and pass the Senate, because we're tired of paying through the nose for an inefficient and wasteful, fraudulent, abused system in Idaho.
Well, I have to go back and I was talking this morning on the air about what's been going on with the doctors here in Idaho. And if you go back to 2015, 16, 17, we had some great clinics here in Idaho, small clinics with great doctors and mm-hmm. tremendous care at reasonable prices. Yeah. And all of a sudden, everybody was acquired by the corporate medicine machine called St. Luke's. And they just grabbed them one after the other, offering them these fantastic bonuses and salaries. And now all of a sudden, it's amazing. The reverse is starting to happen. They finally figured out that what they had at St. Luke's is not as great as they thought it was, because if they leave, they got to go to some remote area in Idaho to practice, because they have all of these agreements with St. Luke's. So my problem is, we have one of the lowest number of doctors in the country in Idaho. That is, as far as I'm concerned, due to the corporatization of the medical field. And I think that is one of the reasons that we have had such a huge increase in the cost of Medicaid and Medicare.
Yeah, I'm a free market person, and I tend to think that if we had a free market, free from regulation, free from the pollutive nature of government funding, we would have a lot more efficient industry there in healthcare, because the prices would drive, you know, the prices would reflect the demands and supplies that are going on in the market. And so if demand is higher, that tends to drive up prices and attract more providers. if prices are low because Idahoans don't need as much health care or health insurance, then it then providers tend to leave and find more lucrative markets. But to the extent government is being a third-party payer that pays, that no matter what my consumption is, government pays for it or health insurance pays for it, it distorts the market dramatically. And so then we have to have these decisions that aren't based on economics, but are based on corporate interest, special interest, government power. And that's where you get markets that are wholly inefficient. You have prices that are out of whack. You have shortages in places and surpluses in others. And we scratch our head going, why are doctors leaving? Or why don't doctors stay as much? Well, it's because the prices aren't reflective of what people really need.
And the other thing is, I remember talking with several docs that had their own practices. And of course, the cost of insurance is extremely high when you have your own practice. But they actually could not make it on what they were getting paid by Medicaid. They just could not make it. And they did not pay them the numbers that they needed to be sustainable. So they left altogether and just retired. And that may be what's happening too. But again, I put a lot of this on the big hospitals who we have here, that we have here in Idaho. And I think they are the reason. You know, when we lost something like the Salzer Clinic, that was one of the great clinics in the Treasure Valley. And we were still lucky we had the Treasure Valley Hospital.
Well, but, you know, you can blame the hospitals. You can also blame government. You can blame them both. The hospitals are merely responding to incentives. They're following the money. And so they go to where the money is. And the government directs money not toward the most efficient things. And so COVID just wrecked healthcare markets because they just dumped a bunch of money into the system. You got paid by the number of cases you had. And so what's the incentive to say somebody was not a COVID case? Suddenly everyone's a COVID case. And so therefore you have artificially more money going into some services, which necessarily means less money in other services. And we've totally distorted a market. Then we scratch our head and go, why isn't it working well?
Well, we only have two major hospitals in the Treasure Valley area. In fact, actually, even further than the Treasure Valley area. How do you solve the problem? If you have no real competition for them, how are you going to change what's going on?
Yeah, well, they are masters at erecting barriers to entry. You want to start a medical practice? You want to start a hospital? Just try and do that. How would you possibly do that? You got to get all sorts of certificates of care, all sorts of permits and whatever. It's almost impossible to enter that market. And so therefore we're left with, in this case, an oligopoly, but the most extreme oligopoly you can have is two firms, which is essentially what we have. We have two major hospitals. They dominate the market and they are very effective at working the government levers to make sure that whatever little guy competition there is out there does not come and threaten their model.
What disturbs me more is they're both tax-exempt organizations.
Oh, yeah. And here's what they do. Did you know if you're a doctor's office, you have to pay property taxes, you have to pay your income taxes, right? But if St. Luke's buys out that building and practice, then suddenly it's part of the hospital and the property tax goes away and gets shifted to everyone else. And that's what's been happening, is they're buying up medical practices around and they get to enjoy the tax exemption.
Yeah, I remember when they bought the Morrison Knutson buildings, and I kept saying, what are they going to use those for? I understand they've been using them to house these traveling nurses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're in the hotel business, they're in the banking business, they're in the insurance business, and they're in the healthcare business. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's good for them, bad for us. You know, I'm old enough to remember healthcare and health insurance pre-2010. You know, when you had competition in health insurance, competition in health providers. I had a job that provided health insurance, and it was affordable enough for them to provide us a very good plan. You know, the health insurance premiums were low enough to be able to, for us to afford it. The deductibles were actually deductibles. They weren't super payments that didn't even add up to your costs. Our first daughter cost us $5.
Wow. You try to find that today.
That was our co-payment. And so that's what we had. And, but things changed when you had Obamacare. Suddenly everyone was going to be forced onto health insurance, even the able-bodied and relatively healthful, all sorts of requirements put on the health industry so that, premiums go through the roof. And so you pay the premium, but it's not really insurance anymore because the deductibles are so high. You're paying for pretty much everything out of pocket anyway. So what's the point of having a so-called insurance? It's they've wrecked the markets. In fact, I couldn't even call them a market anymore. It's just crony capitalism. I don't like that term because there's nothing capital about it. It's crony statism through the healthcare industry.
I'd say it's capital robbery.
Capital robbery. Tyranny. Let's go there. Tyranny.
I have to laugh because when I take a look back at when I first got here in Idaho 31 years ago, it wasn't like this. It really wasn't. And I think the whole thing changed. The last governor we had that I thought was worth anything was Governor Batt. And all of a sudden, we got three terms of Butch Otter, and he was good for about, I don't know, one term. And then I think he got married, and he made a hockey stick turn to the left, and everything started to go queer on us here.
Yeah, it was amazing. I got here in, 2001, and so I remember Kemp Thorne, then Risch, and then Otter, and it's been a steady downward descent. Bob, I'm just thinking about the show so far. We're going to be accused of being negative Nellies and curmudgeons here or something. Do you want to
talk about good things?
Okay, let's do it. Okay.
What's going on that's good in legislature.
I'll give you one good thing. It won't start out good, but just bear with me here. Did you know that the national debt today is about $36 trillion.
Believe it or not, I have it on my screen right up here.
The federal government, that's $106,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. So family of four, family of five, you owe $500,000 just in federal debt. It's never going to be collected. It's always going to be hanging over us. It's getting to be where interest on the debt, I think, is the second biggest line item in the federal budget. And so what happens? We elect a president, and Elon Musk is put in charge of efficiency and DOGE and everything. And it's kind of a breath of fresh air. Suddenly you have hope again that maybe something can happen to restore some sanity to the federal budgeting process. But that's not the good news I want to talk about. I want to talk about, could we do something like that in Idaho? Well, I got an email the other day. Actually, I got two at the same time from a couple of legislators who are in the so-called Gang of Eight. These are eight conservative legislators, three in the Senate, five in the House, most of them from the Magic Valley, but then we have Kent Marmon and Lucas Kaler from up here, who have made a commitment. And this commitment is a lot like, I don't know if you remember Newt Gingrich, the contract with America in 19... 19-
Absolutely.
That. They're making a similar commitment, and it's one that says, you know what? We recognize Idaho has increased its budget by 55% in the last 5 years. It is out of control. And so this year, instead of just voting rubber stamping every budget that comes through because it has a nice thing in there for Meals on Wheels or whatever the deal is, they're going to take a critical eye to every enhancement budget. Now, first of all, they get to vote on the budgets that just keep the lights on and adjust for the cost of living for employees. That's already done. But enhancement budgets, the things that are adding new government spending, adding to an agency, or incorporating more federal spending, or adding employment, they have committed to voting against those. So if it adds a federal dollar to the budget, they're going to vote no. If it adds one new employee to the agency, they're going to vote no. If it adds spending increases beyond replacement costs, and so that's beyond replacing the vehicles or replacing worn out equipment of averaging about 1.2%, anything over 1.2%, they won't vote for. And did you know that if they and the other legislators held to this commitment, they would save Idahoans about $900 million, nearly $1 billion in savings, just by holding the line on spending? All they have to do.
How are you going to get them to do it?
Well, we have eight already committed to do it. I would say if you're listening to this podcast, call up your legislator and say, hey, are you one of those eight? And if you're not, why aren't you? Because you told me you were a conservative. I remember that. I got a thing in the mail that said you were a conservative. You told me you were. Well, this is where the proof is. Can you hold the line on government spending? Now, it sounds easy to do. Just vote no. I did it a lot. But you know what happens? Legislators, they start to see things. They're like, well, gosh, you know, Idaho Public Television, that's important. People benefit from that. Oh, you know, this endowment for the arts. Ah, God, what about the Idaho Historical Society? You know, there's lots of things that sound good, but when they have increases over 1.2% and you add them all up, that's how we get 55% growth over 5 years. You got to say no to the little things and the big things to really make a difference.
Well, I've even noticed that and have actually changed my grocery purchase habits. Instead of doing all of my grocery shopping at the wonderful Costco, I'm now a Winco boy. And I have to tell you, if I can have the opportunity to shop in Ontario, I will do that.
Yeah. And you will save yourself 6% just like that. That is the frustrating thing, that the legislature could save Idahoans 6% on food costs in the blink of an eye if they would just do it, but they don't.
You mean 6% plus the cost of inflation?
That's right, because as food prices go up, you not only get the pleasure of paying those higher prices, but a commensurate 6% on top of those higher prices because government benefits from the inflation. No wonder legislators are queasy about getting rid of it.
So tell me, do you think that they added on that that inflation number to what they're going to be giving back to the people as a credit?
Nope. They just take the increased inflation in tax collections and they keep, I looked at the last time they increased the tax credit from $100 to $120 was in 2022. I was there. I voted against it because we should have repealed the thing. But since then, we have fast forwarded now 3 years later and they want to increase the credit from $120 to $135 per person. They're estimating that would be a $50 million a tax credit increase. But since the last time they increased it, the amount of grocery taxes paid has gone up by $100 million. They're not even keeping pace with inflation or population growth. They say we're adjusting this because of higher food costs, but they're only adjusting it by half a measure.
Well, then we need to call them out on that every chance we get, and you're doing a hell of a job.
That's what I'm doing right now. The government always profits from taxes. When they do a tax and a tax credit, and they don't credit you back as much as you paid, they're profiting from the taxes. So don't let them fool you and say, we increased your credit, now you're better off. You're still not as well off as you should have been.
So should we call this eight the Doge of Eight?
Oh, that'd be great. Eight Dog Night, whatever, I don't know. I respect them for their commitment, and I will do everything I can to reward them for keeping to their commitments. I expect they will, because they're strong legislators. So I'm excited to watch this happen and see how many other legislators will come along with them or be left out there hanging and be susceptible to people like me who are going to call them out. And Idahoans are tired of this. They're feeling the pinch at the grocery store and at the gas pump every time they go. But you know who never suffers from inflation? Government. You know who never suffers from a bad economy? Government, because they have rainy day funds. They just stock up your tax dollars to use it when they don't get enough of your tax collections.
And you know, I never understood that. That's our tax money. I don't need them investing it or holding it for me. I would prefer to have it back in my pocket.
You know, the last time Idaho government was ever cut in terms of dollars, I think it might have been 2010, 2011, right around there. The only reason they cut government is because tax collections went down because of the economic decline with the housing crisis, right? That's the only time you ever get to cut government, is when the economy suffers and tax collections go down. But if they store up rainy day funds so that when the economy suffers, they don't have to do cuts, we'll never be able to cut government.
So how are we going to find our Donald Trump for Idaho?
That's a good question. Is there a Donald Trump for Idaho? Brad Little hasn't been it.
No, that's for sure. He hasn't been it. No, I have to laugh because I know him. I've met him so many times, but he has never lived up to his being a conservative and pounding on that every time he runs for election. It just drives me nuts that people still believe him.
Well, here's the little white lie that's told. He will tell you that under his tenure, and he just did this a few weeks ago, said that $4.6 billion in tax cuts during his tenure. Well, the vast majority of that was a one-time tax cut. So it wasn't a cut in taxes going forward. It's just a one-time tax cut. You got a rebate check or something like that with his little name printed on it or something. And so, yeah, those all add up to $4.6 billion over all those years, $4.6 billion. But our state budget is $14 billion. Over this time that he talks about a $4.6 billion tax cut, government has spent close to $60 or $70 billion. So don't tell me it's a great tax cut because you're comparing it to a one-year budget. All the years of tax cuts. Compare all the years of tax cuts to all the years of spending, you get a much different view. And by the way, we're still paying a lot in taxes. And so give me a one-time tax cut and call that a great accomplishment. Well, let's do one-time government spendings. How about that? I mean,
I think the critical part of what's going on is that people who look at some of these comments that are made by our politicians don't really understand the gravity or the history of what's gone on here in Idaho over the last 10, 15, 20 years, because they've never really been involved. They're too busy trying to make a living. And that's what it comes down to. You have to get them engaged. I've been trying to get them engaged since 2015, and actually before that with the Tea Party. It's not an easy drive. It's not an easy drive at all.
No, it's not. This Doge thing, this Trump thing, it gives me hope because I see many more people engaged across the country and indeed in Idaho about saying, hey, you know what? There can be systemic change. I would like to think the same for Idaho. And so we are pointing this out as best we can. At the end of this legislative session, we'll publish our freedom index again. We'll publish our spending index. And you'll see very dramatically who has supported big government and who has supported a more conservative viewpoint. And I hope that Idahoans can reward those who do well for them and at the polls punish those who don't. And so that's what we're going to focus on here at the Idaho Freedom Foundation. I have hope. I mean, see what's happening at the national level. I think we can do that at the state level. But you're right. I think we do need a Trump-like figure for governor. We do need some better legislative leaders, ones who will let the bodies vote for the good stuff instead of put it in chairman's drawers.
Well, I will say this, having lived in Idaho for 31 years, I have learned one thing. If you hold a pound of hope in one hand and a pound of dog poop in the other, guess which one weighs more?
They weigh the same.
Bob. You know, I'm not trying to make fun of this. It's a serious situation, but, you know, you have to laugh sometimes. Because it's so crazy, the stuff they're doing. It's no different than this U.S. aid that we're looking at in the federal budget. All of this money being thrown out at stupid things. Nobody ever knew about them. And then we have a judge who says, You can't stop that. Well, excuse me. Does anybody understand that a district judge in a state, all right, district federal judge in a state, cannot put out an edict for any place but in his state?
Yeah, jurisdictions matter, you'd think. I thought we said we were going to end on a happy note, and but I still feel like I've been a curmudgeon the whole show. Well, let me end on a happy note, and that is this hope of this Gang of Eight, who has made this commitment to hold the line on budgets. They get legislators come along with them, and we do see the line held on budgets. We could see for the first time in over a decade, first time maybe ever in a period of economic growth, that the government actually doesn't grow along with it. Wouldn't that be an amazing thing? Idaho could be a beacon on a hill. I would be the first to applaud the legislature, even legislative leaders, if they come along and do that same thing. I'd be happy to do that.
I'll tell you, I'd like to do anything I can to help these people along, because if there's one thing we do need, it's the solidification of conservatives to actually change the way the state has been moving. And if these guys, if they're on the right track, then let's stick with them and do whatever we can to help them out.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you, Bob. Let's watch the votes, hold them accountable, praise them for the good work they do. Hold them accountable for the clunker votes that they do, and let the voters choose the right.
Well, I want to thank you again for all you do with the Idaho Freedom Foundation, because, you know, I learned a long time ago to be very discerning when it comes to politics and it comes to our government. And you guys have really put forward some of the best information that's out there. I don't know of another place. Well, maybe there's that one in Washington. What is it, CFC, CFP?
What, CPAC?
CPAC, yeah. They're the other ones that have an organization that puts out some pretty decent information.
You know, they do state legislators too, and yes. You hold up their scores to ours. They look very similar.
I noticed that. And I'm looking forward to publishing the voting at the end of this session, to show people just how people in the legislature have voted. And I do use your numbers to do that, because it's important for people to understand that there are those out there that are fighting for them and trying to help change things.
Absolutely. We're excited to do it. We're happy to do it. I know that we're under a microscope, so we make sure we get every number right, and that we can back it all up, because if we get something wrong, they try and discredit our whole organization. When the governor or the government gets something wrong, it's like they demand a pass.
What we need to do is to put the government under the microscope.
Absolutely. I'm with you. Let's do it.
That's where it goes.
Hey, it's Valentine's Day. Go take care of your sweethearts. Have a great day, Bob.
Thank you. You too, my friend. You have yourself a great day, and we'll talk to you in another week.
All right. Peace out, my friend.
Thank you, my friend.
You see, in this world, there's two kinds of people, my friend. Those with loaded guns and those who dig.